This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 87 and today's date is the 2nd of November and it's currently 8 minutes past six in the UK. And I'm really, really happy that we've got our guest with us again today. And this is James from Twitter and you can find him at onejames1n1. Hi, James. How are you?
Hi, Peter. Good, thanks. Really, really good to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. And of course, we've got our, lots of people describe him in different ways. I'll just give him his name, at Wheely Dealer on Twitter. Hi, Pete. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I've feeling a bit better today. So I'm in, you know, quite an ebullient mood.
Good, good, good.
I've just made a word up there.
Yeah, I think you have. You tend to anyway. I want to start this podcast, if I may, guys, with... just to give a bit of feedback regarding the last guest we had on, because we've got another brilliant guest on as well. I want you to just give Michael T a shout out, because the feedback we had from Michael being on the show was absolutely phenomenal. So you've got some boots to fill here, James, and I know you're going to do extremely well. But I want you to thank Michael again for coming on the show. And a bit like Prime Ministers of the UK, we have one for the first time in ages, and then we've got a second one on. So, James, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about you, James, and the markets and so on and so forth, mate. You know how it goes. We'll just talk a little bit about the markets first. You can join in, tell us what your thoughts are about it all, and we'll take it from there, see what happens, yeah? We have this conversation each time we start the podcast, really, about where the markets are heading, what our thoughts are about it. We've had the shenanigans with Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. And we had the markets semi sort of rally, a bit of a bear market rally from the 12th of October, where we hit 6,800-ish, 6,826. And the markets have been in a bit of a bearish rallying mood, I keep saying to people. We're still in the bear market. And this week and the tip of last week touched a couple of times 7,200. And we've just closed the market out. The Fed's spoken, and I think really told me it was a 0.75% increase, FOMC increase. Markets reasonably like it. We touched a intraday high today of 7,205, and the FTSE 100 closed out at 7,144. FTSE 250, the engine of the all share, was at 18,217, which was actually up 0.12%. FTSE All Share was down 0.48% at 3,910. FTSE AIM All Share just holding up above 812 again, just down 0.31%. So I'm still in the camp where I'm very, very cautious on the markets. And what I've been watching that 7,000 sort of line in the sand. We've managed to inch above that and stay above that over the past week or so since Rishi and Jeremy Hunt's come in and calmed the markets a little bit. We've got to wait for the next results or outcomes from the Bank of England. And then the 17th, when he comes out and tells us exactly what he's planning to do, him and Jeremy, with regards to what they're going to do with the markets. So what are your thoughts? First with you, James, about the markets and the volatility we've had since the 12th of October.
Well, it's certainly the political changes that have been going on have been sort of quite unlike anything we've seen for some time. I mean, the markets still seem to be in that range that they have been now for a little bit in terms of a FTSE 100 particularly. They seem to be marking time overall at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think that's interesting. I mean, you're dead right with FTSE 100. I think that 7,000 level seems to be really important again. Yeah, we're above it at the moment. The thing we haven't mentioned is that we had the Fed news tonight, because we're recording this on Wednesday, the 2nd of November, and we literally started it just after the Fed announcement. As Peter said, the market seemed to like that. From what I can tell, it was the market was expecting 0.75%, but it was the wording has slightly changed, and the market seemed, I didn't quite catch what they were getting at, but the market seemed to like it. Now, the complication is that we've got the Bank of England rate decision tomorrow, on Thursday. So that's going to affect things, presumably. And of course, then we've got the non-farm payroll, you know, US non-farm payrolls on Friday. So it's quite a busy week of economic news. I think when you layer on top of that, the fact that we've actually had a reasonably good rally since the real lows, what was that, the start of October, I guess, wasn't it? Was it start of October? Yeah. The real low points.
The lows, yeah.
Yeah, the real low points when they were worried about the LDI crisis on the pension funds and things. Since that low point, it rallied reasonably well. The really interesting one to me is that the Dow has rallied unbelievably. I mean, you look at the RSI levels, daily RSI, the Dow was on something like 68 last night. That's a very, very high RSI. It's not quite overbought by the strict definition of 70, but it's very high. Interesting, the NASDAQ is still the lagging one. The FTSE 100, I think, was sort of mid-tier. I think in terms of RSI, I think it was on about 60 or something. So it was not crazy. I think the DAX was similar. So I sort of feel that shorter term, I think, as you said, we're sort of treading water, but I think it could be like a bit of a consolidation before we might try to move up a little bit more. Because I think we still haven't rallied enough from such a heavy sell-off. I mean, that was such a big sell-off at the start of October. Everybody who wanted to sell had the perfect opportunity. They haven't taken that opportunity to sell. They sort of missed the boat for a little while, I suspect. And bear in mind, November tends not to be a month where you get really big sell-offs. That tends to be October and September. And of course, December is often the best month for the year. So, you know, there's so many things going on. It's a very complicated picture.
It's complicated even more so, Pete, because we've got the midterm elections coming up in the US.
Yeah.
And that could impact quite a lot of stuff regarding,
yeah,
or, you know, if they do have a sneeze or a cough in the US because of how the midterms go, the UK markets will catch pneumonia, no doubt. So that's a bit of a worry.
And of course,
so we'll see.
But you've got Putin carrying on with the stuff that's going on in Ukraine. You've got Iran seems to be getting involved in that because they're supplying weapons to them. I mean, it's such a messy picture. It really is.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I've got that I'm looking at as a positives going forward right now is the talk of opening up of China and COVID restrictions being limited, and they're trying to sort that out. And if that comes back, there'll be more people going out, buying, selling, you know, factories will open up a bit more fully, and that will generate a bit more of a momentum for the markets, hopefully, with a bit more buying in the next couple of months, if that happens.
I caught some discussion about that on, I think it was on CNBC this morning or something like that. And they were saying how, despite a high level, there's rumours, and it is only really rumours, that the Chinese government might ease up on the COVID policy. They said when you actually go to the more micro level, they're still locking down really firm. I mean, the other day they locked down Disneyland, so loads of kids were stuck in Disneyland, which must have been hell for them. But that was for one, you know, they have one case and they lock everything down. Foxconn, you know, the one that makes Apple phones and whatever, they've had a problem there. That's been locked down. I mean, you know, there's this real sort of disconnect between the rumour.
It's just talk at the minute, Pete. So that, yeah, if that happens, so that would be a benefit for the markets. Right, James, we're talking about the markets. But firstly, let's introduce you, mate. You share what you want to share with yourself, regarding yourself, how long you've been investing, your methodology. I know you're a high conviction sort of guy who tends to buy, hold, and you've got to look out for something to be quite bad for you to go, I'm done with this company. So just share a little bit of insight about yourself, mate, and as much as you want, and then we've got a couple of questions for you.
Sure. Well, In terms of investing journey, I guess I initially began investing by putting some money in trackers. And I seem to remember one of the first trackers was a Virgin one. I think they were one of the first on the market with a tracker when they first began putting them out. So initially started there, and then over time I think I could probably do some of this myself in terms of investing directly in shares. So
how long ago was that?
Well, yeah, it was really sort of shortly after the global financial crisis, and I'd got some cash in bonds, and the interest rate was sort of going down and down. I was thinking, this is no good. Probably like a lot of people at that time, thinking, you know, need to get a better return on those savings, and started to then look at stocks. Fortunately, I started off small, which is great because you always make tons of mistakes at this start. I did have Carillion for a while and a few others like that. I didn't hold them for that long, so I didn't actually get the sort of problems. But, you know, you sort of get sucked in sometimes to these value stocks with high dividends. But only when you really start to sort of peel the onion do you realize, hang on a minute, this really isn't as good as it looks. And I think sometimes you've got to make these mistakes for it to really sink in and help you then, hopefully in the future, to make better investing decisions, to learn what to look for before you sort of then, you know, hopefully build the portfolio, add a bit more cash in. And those mistakes, if you then make them later, are obviously of a bigger impact. I think.
Sorry, James, had you had a sort of interest in shares and that before? Had it been something you'd sort of considered when you were younger, or is there any, you know, any family got any or anything like that?
Back in university days, I remember doing a paper on, it was sort of the efficient market hypothesis and valuation of shares.
Wow,
and
I
picked Sainsbury's as the share to do for that.
Yeah.
And I remember sort of writing it all up and thinking, "Pooh, I don't think I'd buy that stock," having done that detailed review. But it certainly confirmed to me that, you know, the efficient market isn't really existing, and there are opportunities for people who do their homework, who do their due diligence, particularly with smaller cap shares where there's not so much research and analysis done. So that was an early sort of encouragement to look at that. And I then came back to it, you know, a few years later, but always had an interest in business news and what companies were doing.
So did you do like a business studies degree, and what made you do the efficient market hypothesis? It sounds like quite a surreal subject to just choose off the shelf. Where did that idea come from?
Oh, that was the topic we were given.
Right.
I think it was, yeah, to follow a stock for a period of time, to track whether price sensitive information leads to, I guess, you know, the appropriate movements in the stock, and also use a few valuation models against it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So was that business studies then?
That was accounting. It was one of the more interesting subjects, though, within that degree.
Right. Yeah.
So James, you're a primarily a long-term buy and hold investor, correct?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So just talk us through your methodology. Yeah, or philosophy with regards to finding a sector you like and researching and selecting through that sector and then choosing a stock. How do you go about finding that stock that you're going to buy and potentially hold for a minimum of, say, 3 to 5 years?
So in terms of what I've got a number of themes within the portfolio I have, in terms of some defensive, some growth stocks, some value stocks, and so on. And That's sort of deliberate because I think it helps. Well, it doesn't seem to be at the moment, but I think it should help center the portfolio and avoid one theme, perhaps, you know, going against it in a big way. But in terms of researching stocks, I keep quite a long watch list, and I've got various tiers of watch list because I'm sure, like many people, you start a watch list and it gets hugely sort of long. So then you sort of do a sort of top of the watch list sort of section where you've got the best ideas you think are close to getting in your portfolio. And then I've got a deep dive review watch list, which is stocks I really want to take a closer look at, understand better and review deeper. And I try and keep alert to what people are saying about certain stocks. I tend not to be sort of led by hype about stocks, but certainly people talking about sharing ideas, I will review a lot that way. And if I like the look of something, I'll pop it on a watch list to then do a deeper dive on. But in terms of researching a stock, it's all the usual things, going through the RNSs in some depth, looking at a whole range of indicators. I try and be quite careful on debt. I've not got many stocks within my portfolio that have debt. I guess the main ones are in some of the energy stocks I hold, but try and avoid that, which is good at the moment. Also looking at just brokers are they upgrading or are they downgrading? That's always a useful sign as well. So it's a whole range of things to try and then get myself closer to making a decision on something.
Can you guys hear a banging noise coming from my microphone?
No.
It's funny because we were talking about Disney. Legoland's just down the road from me, Legoland Windsor. They have firework displays and it's obviously kicking off now. It sounds like, yeah, it's crazy. I'm glad that it's not picking up on the mic.
No worries. So, James, with regards to the portfolio, you're looking for upgrades. You're trying to avoid the debt as best you can regarding the stocks that you hold in your portfolio. Is there any sectors that you go, I'm absolutely not going anywhere near that particular sector? Because everyone's got one that you just go, no, not for me.
I tend to avoid gambling stocks. I don't know whether I've got a moral objection to them. I just don't understand the sector. And it's interesting, for other people sharing stuff who do, but I've never got into it. So I tend to avoid those. Tend to avoid defense. Again, not because I've made a conscious moral decision around how defense companies sell their products and where to, albeit it's sort of something I've never been entirely keen on. And, the usual sort of sin stocks like gambling and a few like that. But some of this is more because I've never sort of got into the types of companies to better understand them.
It's interesting with the gambling one, because I've dabbled with gambling in the past, but in recent years, I've sort of lost interest in it. And I think part of it is just that in those kind of sectors, you're so likely to get regulatory problems. So you can have a stock that seems to be doing pretty well, you're happy with how it's going, and all of a sudden something comes in on the regulation side. Government introduces a new tax or bans certain machines in betting shops or something. And you can get hammered like 20% overnight. And it's almost like a risk not taking. The defense one is interesting because I've got BAE Systems and I'm totally with you that I think some of the regimes that get, sold to us so questionable. But then with what's happened in Ukraine, you sort of think, well, actually, we do need defense. So yeah. So there's a sort of a positive moral case to make for it as well. So it's a bit of a weird one, really, defense.
It's a tricky one because, yes, you sort of, on the one hand, it's needed. And as you say, Pete, the situation in Ukraine makes a very strong case for it. But then when these defense items are sold to regimes that use suppression, you're thinking, oh, okay, hang on there. And so I ended up sort of shying away from it.
But I guess the point is, and it's a point that listeners, you know, might appreciate, in the sense that you can have objections to certain sectors. Like, I don't do tobacco. I'm really not interested in that. And it's like, it doesn't really matter. And in fact, I think it actually helps your investing, because it cuts out a whole universe of stocks you haven't got to waste time looking at. You can sort of reduce your bit you look at, if you like, make it a smaller chunk.
I tend to also avoid utility stocks, partly because I think they're more suited to different strategies than mine. Albeit, Pete, you've had
Telecom Plus.
Yes. That's done really well for you. So
yeah,
there you go.
But I think again, it's you've nailed it, because you mentioned strategy. For me, those are really an income stock. I've got it in my income portfolio. And the fact that it's done well for capital as well has been a bonus. But the real reason I sort of bought it in the first place was because it was paying, like, you know, over 4% dividend many years ago when I first bought it. And it's got a good history of raising the dividend. So I think you're right. I think, you know, that utilities and that work great as income stocks.
Yeah. So, James, what's your preferred sector? And share with us a couple of stocks that you've got and how you got into them, please.
Sure. I don't know if I've got a preferred sector. I because I've got a number of stocks across a range of sectors. I have quite a number of energy stocks. So some are, you know, resource stocks that are extracting various resources and paying dividends. So Sylvania Platinum, for example, and got Camel, and a couple of others. So they're good dividend paying stocks. And then some pre-production ones. So Horizonte, for example, and Emerson, Jangada. So there's a few there that are pre and post production. I think one of the stock that's got the highest weighting at the moment in my portfolio is Tremor. And Peter, I know we sort of corresponded on Twitter a month or so back on that. And I think it was one you were finding sort of pros and cons, let's say.
I think it's a very interesting company. I think it's, I think, and I've said this to you and I said this to the people, I think it's just been tarred because of who owns it and where it is based, you know, even though most of its revenues are received from the US. I just think it's just wrongly valued. And I think at some point, when somebody else actually gives it a bit of momentum, that the share price will move significantly. But I'm not sure when that will be. I think it's wrongly tarred because of where it's based, James.
I think at the moment, so it's advertising. So Tremor is advertising, and particularly around connected TVs. And as they went into the pandemic, they actually had quite a fall off in their traditional business. But they'd bought a company called Unruly at the beginning, I think, of 2020 or back end of 2019. And that really came forward in terms of a recovery for them, and they made a really strong share price gain through the sort of latter part of, I think, 2020 into 21, if I'm remembering right. And they did really well out of that, because it seemed to be the place to be, really high margin business. And then since probably summer last year, it's then fallen back, and it's come back a long way. So company's now trading on a forward PE of around 3, which is just bonkers. I mean, it's super low. They're buying back shares as well. They've got tons of cash on the balance sheet. They've just bought a company called Amobee, and they're integrating that at the moment. So they're going to give an update, I think, in a week or so's time on quarter 3. I think the risk at the moment is, obviously, advertising can be very susceptible to downturns. Yeah. They did guide early in September that they were actually going to improve a little bit on what they'd previously said for this year, which was a surprise. So I'll certainly be looking to see if they're sustaining that. I suspect, though, as soon as the US starts to really show it's coming out of any downturn, that will probably be a time when they do well. And my guess or my working thesis is that the US will come out of any downturn faster than anywhere else, because I think the Fed have been a lot stronger and quicker, more decisive on interest rates. So I think they'll be starting to pare them back a lot faster than elsewhere as a result. And that will then lead to companies and businesses then coming back out of any downturn and talking about better results. And I think at that point, Tremor could really take off. At some point, it just can't stay where it is if nothing else changes. I think there'll be a re-rating. And if you look at the projections in the market at the moment for the next couple of years, EPS, then even on a PE of 10 for a tech company, that's a 1,000p share price compared to somewhere around 350 now. So it's my largest holding. It's not always a comfortable hold, because often
if you get one that doesn't really make sense, it does feel uncomfortable, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? Does. If it just looks so attractive, you sort of think, well, why is it so damn low? I've been there myself.
And I think the challenge is if the technology changes or things move on, that's the risk, because it's in an area, I'd say, you know, at the cutting edge of where technology is going and the services they're offering, and they're super high margins. So there's obviously a bit of risk there if things do change.
Mm-hmm. And for me, James, it's about the fact it's a tech company, essentially a tech company. So advertising technology is what it's all about. Okay. So you've got, as you say, a ridiculous PE of 3.5. Okay. And in theory, even if you had the UK discount still in place, you should have it on a PE of 10, right? So if you had a PE of 10, where would it be? It would be between £9 and £11. So let's just pluck out of the air and say £10. It's now sitting at what? Sub £4, £3.5, something like that, as when I last looked. So you've got a situation where you're thinking, actually, if this gets re-rated, if they sort it out, if they carry on, you know, generating the revenues that they could going forward, this is a £10 stock, if you're patient enough. And during that time, it could go lower than where it is right now. The problem we've got with the advertising sector at the minute is that you've got the likes of S4 Capital, you've got the likes of Future, you've got the likes of Snap, have all been going like that, wobbly, wobbly, all the way and drifting down, because, as you say, we're going through this sort of flux at the minute. And what's the first thing that people give up? Marketing and advertising spend. When that comes back, and if it does, like you say, in America, the likes of those companies, and especially the most undervalued one, which at the moment is Tremor, gets the fastest re-rating. So patience. It's all about patience, mate. And I think you'll do very, very well out of it at some point. And before it rallies, I might actually join you finally in buying some. It's been on my watch list for some time. When I mentioned it last time when we had that chat, I haven't, you know, dropped in there yet, but it's on my watch list, and I'm waiting for the markets to come out. And I will be looking at that trading update later on as well when it comes out.
Yeah, I guess that's the key thing. If that trading update is good, and if it, you know, even says we're actually going to be better than expected, that is going to jump a lot, I would expect. You know, it's on such a low rating. And as you said, with cash as well, it does look rather interesting.
Nice dividend, mate.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
So anything else you've got in your portfolio that's not related to advertising, James, that you want to share with us that you're quite keen on? And let me reverse that question. You're a long-term holder. So one of the stocks in your portfolio that you've had for quite a while, right, and you've been happy with, that's obviously the markets have been wobbly this year, but you've been like, no, I'm keeping that for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years maybe, because you're happy with it.
Well, it's not necessarily super long, but I've had war paint, so W7L, for just over a year now. And I bought in, I'd have to look back, I think it was in the first half of last year. And I thought I could detect signs that business was improving. They were, and I think from what I saw, they were signing contracts, but, you know, building out deals. And the share price then went on a tear. I think I bought around 120, and it went up. And I sort of had a mental sell note. I'll sell at £2.50. And the share price went up and up and up, and it got to about £2.40. And I said, no, I'm not selling. I'm £2.50 is my price. And then it sort of did a nice sort of, it turned over and then has come all the way back to £1.20. And through that, they've actually been updating the market to say that business is going well. They've been upgrading. If you look at the broker projections, they've been stepping up over the past year, both for the, you know, current year and next year. And they've been signing deals. They've gone into Tesco's. They've been into Boots. They've been signing deals in the US. They're about to go into CVS. They've done a couple of others. So all the things I saw, it seemed to be the case. They've been coming through. They've been, I mean, the EPS projections have gone up something like 50% over the past year or so. But the share price has just been on this weird journey. So I think
like so many stocks this year, it's been one of those years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I mean, the stock jumped today. I don't know why. It was sort of up 9%, but it was tipped earlier in October, but in a couple of places. But I wonder if people are now picking up on this, perhaps. But it seems to be doing really well. It's in the right place. It's
they do lipstick, don't they? They do colored
cosmetics, and it's on the sort of more value end of the market. So perhaps now is an even better time to be producing that. And they've got some good brands, and they seem to resonate well with consumers. So that's one. It's hard to detect in some of these some of these consumer stocks. Where's the moat? Where is it? But their brands seem to be, they've invested well in them, they've built them up, and that seems to be helping them. And they do seem to, as I say, resonate with their target market, which is more typically women. They have got some male brands, but mostly targeted at younger women, and at the value, more value end of the ranges. So it's in a sweet spot, seems to be.
Mm. You mentioned this.
I've heard it mentioned recently. There was a chap, Dave Mutton, who works at London Southeast, that mentioned the lipstick effect, and that's whereby consumers buy themselves and treat themselves to makeup during times of tough economic times. And obviously, we're heading towards Christmas parties, going out, functions, people dining, meeting the friends, having family around. So this should be a really good quarter for them. You know, when you get the numbers out, maybe for January, February, this could be the season, seasonality-wise, for them to do quite well. And that would boost the revenues and boost the share price and boost sentiment towards them again. I'm not sure. You said about the male brands as well, but I didn't see Pete move, so I'm not sure whether he's actually bought any.
Do you know, I've run out of my stock. It's really frustrating.
What's the share price, Pete, and what's the PE?
Yeah, well, I was just looking on SharePad. It's jumped 9%, as James said. I wonder if Simon Thompson's written it up or something. But at 151 on SharePad, it's talking about a forward PE of 16.5, dropping 2 years out to 16.1. That doesn't seem much of a drop, which implies that the earnings aren't going to grow that fast. I mean, that's probably worth looking at, because maybe they will grow faster, in which case it's sort of cheaper than it looks. Forward dividend, 4.2%, rising to 4.5%. From memory, they've got cash, I think, haven't they?
Yeah, net cash, a little bit.
It's a good balance sheet as well. So like I said, that earnings forecast is a really interesting bit, because I, judging by those figures, I would say there's a good chance they're going to beat on the forecast. So, yeah, I like that one. It's one I've commented on quite a lot recently. I don't hold it, but I do like the look of it. I think it's done a good job. And the, is it Sam Barzini or Barzani or something, CEO?
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem switched on, you know. They seem sensible people, so...
I think they've had a great deal of experience in that business, in a variations of over time, which, you know, really good understanding of, I guess, the routes to market.
There's two of them, isn't it? It's Sam Barzini or something and somebody else, isn't it? Who were sort of the founders, I think.
That's right. I think they've got quite a stake still in the business, if I remember from when I last looked. Yeah, but then when you see broker EPS projections for next year stepping up in line with the current year, you sort of get the impression that brokers don't know much more than anyone else, because they're just putting the following year up in line with this year and waiting to sort of learn more. So that's what gives me, like you said, Pete, the impression that there could be a beat, because if they continue rolling out these contracts, well, they're obviously going to be accretive to EPS. And you know, so long as they don't lose any contracts, you know, why shouldn't then that flow through to the results?
And especially with something like Tesco, I mean, the reach of that is incredible, isn't it? I mean, well, it is the number one grocery shop, you know, the biggest footprint, so...
I think they've got quite an opportunity in the US. It's a small part of the overall business at the moment, but CVS is huge. They've got products out in a couple of smaller department stores with multiple shops. I think they were doing about 500 for one. But, CVS has an amazing network. So if they could get in there and be successful, then that could really be a positive for the US. I think that's happening shortly, the trial there. So we'll see.
Brilliant. Yeah, cool. Now, James, I want to ask you quite a comprehensive question, if I may, because Pete and I, more or less, you know, I do quite a lot of other stuff as well, are deemed to be full-time investors, but you are working full-time and you're trying to fit all your research and monitor your watch list and read the papers and read all the other stuff that's there. How do you go about doing your research and maintaining a quite a healthy portfolio around your work? Because it's quite a tough balancing act, isn't it?
It is. And I assume a number of your listeners are probably in that same boat of balancing, you know, work, family, and investing. And I tend to be quite active first thing in the morning with the RNSs, because it's a good opportunity to see what's going on, you know, what jumps out in terms of trading updates and outlook statements on interims or finals. And I find that some very focused time there can be quite valuable.
What sort of time in the morning are you doing that?
So that's literally as the RNSs come out.
So sort of 7 o'clock sort of time.
Yeah. Yeah. James, that sort of time in the morning is completely alien to Wheelie. So yes, Pete, between 7 and 8 a.m.
Well, I imagine it's several hours before I even think of waking up.
James, carry on. Let James finish. Let him finish. One sec. Carry on, James.
Well, let me just add before that James's tweets... So is it at James1M1, isn't it?
Yeah.
His tweets are really worth reading. I have a look at them every morning. Really good stuff.
Thanks. I find it's quite useful to try and summarise what's going on and to try and do that in a balanced way. So, you know, picking out the good and the not so good and reflecting that fairly. But, you know, there's a number of people doing that. And it's a good way of, you know, if you can't look at everything, catching up on a few things that you didn't spot, and you know, if it looks interesting, going for a closer look. But yeah, I mean, through the day, I'm obviously working. So at lunchtime, I might catch up with some blogs, some tweets. I tend to read the news around, you know, breakfast, and then check what's happened at the end of the day as well. And then I really do more of my research at the weekend. And I tend as well to plan trades either in the evenings or at weekends. And I think this goes back, Peter, I remember you said a number of years ago, I think you did the same. There's a real benefit in that, to avoiding acting on the spur of the moment.
Oh, yeah.
So see something lurch down, you think, oh, goodness, what's going on? It must be bad. I should shoot first, ask questions later. So, you know, deal and then look. And sometimes it's just thin markets or all sorts of stuff. So actually doing the research away from all the noise of the markets is good, as for the similar reasons that you don't get influenced by things going on and just general noise. So I tend to do that at the weekends, and that tends to work well, actually, because then you can sort of separate yourself from everything else, do a bit of quality research, and then you're making sensible decisions on what you might want to go after and buy or sell.
Yeah, that makes good sense.
What I've been trying to do, I think for a couple of, I'm not sure how long now I've been doing it, it feels like a lot longer than it probably is I've been trying to do some stuff in the morning to help people out, in the sense of just putting out about half a dozen, I call it the bullish RNS plus. So what the idea is, to just have a quick scan through, filter out all the rubbish and only put out the ones that I think potentially could do well. I think this week there was one stock, Azerium, OSI, that just finished yesterday, up 72%. The week before last was Deep Matter, that was up 53% on the day. So I'm just looking for half a dozen-ish. Some of them will end up being flat because the market, well, I've read it as a positive. The market goes, not interested. And occasionally you get ones that will be up 30, 40 or 50, or in that case, 70% yesterday. We had Atlantic Lithium come out with some good news today. At one point, I think it was up 25%.
Wow.
And some others, Hurricane was up with some news this morning. So just half a dozen of those I'll put out to try and help people to see what's there. Because obviously some people invest and some people trade as well. So that's another way. But what you said something, sorry, Pete, one sec. You said something really important there, and it coincided what conversation Pete and I have had in the past, and he's mentioned it, about just taking a step back and not panicking. Some, you've got the stock, you've done the research, comes out with some bad news, and some people are there at 8 a.m. and 1 second going like that on the button to just sell. And you're going, I'm just going to wait and see how the market behaves now and have a think about it. And I may not even do anything until the week end comes, and then make a decision at the weekend. Some people just panic, James. So how do you keep yourself composed? How have you built that psychology over the years?
So sometimes I will be there at 8 saying, you know, sell, because if I feel that something has taken away the original investment thesis that I had, then you know, it's getting shot of it, and as quick as you can before the price grinds down further with trades. Other times, I mean, obviously the best example is a good profit warning. So an example of that was a few years ago now, Crichton's maker of a number of soaps and cosmetics and so on, they came out with a profit warning because they were incurring extra costs because they'd sent some production elsewhere. They were paying extra fees for that, and therefore it was going to hit their profits, and they needed to add capacity to be able to handle it. So I didn't sell there. The price did dip. And I think I actually bought a little bit more after a while because the price dipped, and it was, this is a good profit warning. They're doing well. They've got more business than they can manage. They've got a plan for bringing it in-house, so taking off some of those extra costs they're incurring. Now, sometimes it's obviously between the two. It's a grey area, and there's, you know, things that aren't really that great. And it's a question then of saying, well, is this just a sort of bump on the path I think this stock is going to go? It's not great, and ideally wanted it. And I'll hold because if I sell, I might actually sell at the worst moment and then it will bounce back because it's not so bad. And that's the sort of grey area choice, which can be a little bit tricky, I think.
Yeah, I love that wording.
I love that wording, by the way, of a good profit warning.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Sorry, Pete. Sorry, go on.
You nailed it. You know, the idea of a good profit warning, it's a really interesting way of looking at it. I've never really thought about it that way before. I've always sort of thought, oh, God, profit warnings are always bad news. But you're right. Sometimes the profit warnings come out because on a longer time frame, once they've been able to change what they're doing operationally, and often they've got a process in place to do that, then things will actually be better. And that's what seems to happen in that case, which is really interesting.
And this is what goes back to what James said earlier, the importance of knowing the company that you own, the research. You will only James will know, and others that have researched the company will know, that that was a good profit warning. The others that don't and have copied somebody else or have found their way in from a tip somewhere else into that stock went, bang, I'm selling. And that was an opportunity for James to either buy some more at a lower price because it was gifted to him, and then he's making the profit when the share price goes up. Other people have gone, profit one, I'm out. And they will never look back at that stock again until they're moaning about, that was an ex-holding of mine. That was an ex-holding of mine. That was the share price goes up, you know, which often happens to all of us, you know, because we haven't, you know, the ones that haven't been read properly and researched properly, that's what happens.
John, that brings back another concept, the idea of a temporary loss and a permanent loss. And it's like,
crystallizing.
Yeah, it's like the people who sell on the profit warning on that first day have just taken a big loss and crystallized a big loss. But the people who didn't panic, who thought about it and chilled out about it, whatever, and continued to hold it, may well have seen that temporary hit be recovered, and he may have gone on to make a permanent gain out of it or whatever. So, I mean, you've got to be careful because so often one profit warning leads to another profit warning, leads to another profit warning and all sorts of problems. Yeah,
they
come in threes. Yeah. So, you know, a bit like prime ministers. But, you know, it is. I find the profit warning thing a nightmare. I really, over the years, I've thought about it so many different ways. I don't think I've ever came up to a perfect solution.
I think sometimes it's, Pete, you said in a previous episode around a number of stocks, they go into rehab for a period, and you can see the share price lines are just coasting along. They've got all the bad news out. Sometimes they have even more bad news, but it just doesn't dent the share price because everyone who's going to capitulate has capitulated. And then you see things like management changing. Perhaps there's a change in the approach to the business and markets and so on. And that rehabilitation then starts to go on. And that's obviously, it's a good time to be finding that stock or taking a look back and saying, well, that stock that gave all those profit warnings, what's it doing now? And that can be quite useful to keep an eye on.
I completely agree. Now, Pete, we're going to have a little bit of a break here, mate. I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk about the charity backup, where the funds are. I'm going to, whilst you're getting your stuff together, I'm just going to quickly share with people that the Memphis charity that we raised money for last year, they're doing their Christmas list again. We're going to try and deliver 1,500 presents, gifts to disabled young children in and around the Leicestershire and Rutland area. And also there's a group of people I'm going to be working alongside. We're going to be holding a Christmas grotto in Leicester. We're going to put some gifts out there for that, for kids with special needs and disabled children. And what we're going to do is make sure the grotto is personalized for each and every single different child that comes to us. So that's something we're going to be putting some presents towards. So if any of you can help with that, the Christmas list is going to be on the Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/Memphis Christmas List 2022. So any donations would be really, really appreciated for that. So go, Pete.
Right. As Peter was just explaining there, every year we try to have a charity that we sort of bring to listeners that they can help, you know, donate to and whatever, just to give us all a good warm feeling, as we do our joys of investing and trading. The one that we're sort of getting behind this year is the Backup Trust, which deals with people who've had spinal injuries. I'm paraplegic myself with a chest injury, so I'm paralyzed from the chest down, wheelchair user. They do really good work, because what they do is lots of like mentoring and a lot around the whole sort of psychology side of having a life-changing injury and whatever. And they do a load of work with kids and things with outward bound courses, things in the Lake District. And I believe they've done something in Wales and things like that. And they do a lot of like skiing, you know, they do skiing for disabled people and whatever. So it's a really good charity, does some great work. Obviously, as we've said many times before, you know, with the economic climate like it is, charities are finding things tough. So anything you can do to help contribute would be brilliant. To find the Just Giving, we've got a Just Giving site. So it's justgiving.com/fundraising/TwinPetes. And you can find it there. If you go to my website, go to the Wheelie Dealer 2 website, which is www.wheeliedealer2.weebly.co.uk. Go to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast tab, and right at the top, there's a link to that Just Giving page. And I tend to put it out on Twitter every now and again, the link. So, you know, just message me or whatever if you're struggling to find where it is. So far, we've had £2,399 donated this year. So, I'm sure we can still do a bit better. I'll read out some of the comments we've had. Kips, guy I know quite well, keep up the good work, mate. 100 quid donation, which is fantastic. Mark, that's Marbon at Marbon 100. He's a guy who does a lot of stuff with ShareSoc. Really nice bloke, Mark Bentley. I can't hardly read it. Great work, Pete and Pete. When I have a spare moment, I enjoy listening to your banter on the podcast. Some great messages in there for newer investors to avoid some of the pitfalls. Another good guy, Jeffrey Allen. Hi, Jeff, you're right. He's at Gallon 73. Enjoy the Twin Peaks podcast for a while. I'm not sure it means by for a while. Surely the whole thing's brilliant.
It's been a good follow for ages now. Yeah, good guy.
Even better on the TV. Backup sounds like a good cause too. Yeah, well, it absolutely is. Thanks, mate. Girl Scrumpy, excellent. But this is one where Scrumpy's put a comment from TPI 72. So that's about,
wow,
what's that, about 10 weeks ago? Good months guy, Scrumps. Another cracker. Lots of useful info. Great discussion. The snippets like share count dilution are obvious things, but maybe things people forget about. Happy to support a great charity. So that's fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you all.
A point worth reiterating there is a lot of the older podcasts we've done, you might still find them worth listening to, because there are bits that are timely, but there's a lot of educational stuff in them that you know, you can probably listen to several months on and they still sort of make a bit of sense, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that, Pete. Now, James, I'm sure I've seen it, but maybe I'm mixing you up with somebody else. In a sense of you've done some, is it running that you do in your pastime? What do you do in your pastime? You've done some charity fundraising yourself in the past.
Running, I enjoy, yes.
Running, yeah. So tell us about that. And, you know, it's away from work, it's away from family. So you're doing your running. What sort, are you a marathon runner, half marathon runner? What do you do?
Done quite a few half marathons. I find it's a really good way of relaxing and sort of, you know, de-stressing. And chance to get a bit of perspective, good fitness and so on. So yeah, tend to be an all-year runner, so not just, you know, sunny not days.
Fair weather runner. You're knocking some people there, are you, James?
No.
Fair enough, mate.
Have you ever done a marathon?
No, I mean, I did a marathon, but as a pair. So that's really a half marathon.
Oh, right. Oh, what, is it like a relay or something?
Not in tandem, Pete. Half and half. Of.
I thought you were like, you ran it together.
No.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Right. I'm going to break something down because if someone's asked me to talk about this, I'm just going to build this topic around. And essentially, it's about how to become an ISA millionaire. Right. And essentially, a lot of people are investing and they want to get to retirement as early as possible. So I'm trying to break this down. These illustrations I'm going to give do not include all the charges your platform may give you, or the cost of buying and selling the actual investments that you have. And this will cover investments, whether or not they're stocks, stock shares, funds, etc., such as ETFs. Okay, so I'm going to break this down and make the assumption that some people or most people have got 20k in their portfolio right now, so £20,000 right now in an average portfolio. Okay. So your starting point here is £20,000, okay? And if you were to liquidate all of that or to start afresh with 20K, one or two of the others, all right? So you've got £20,000 and you're then adding £150 per month to your ISA, right? And you're getting a CAGR, right? So you're compounding 12% per year for 30 years, okay? That will give you £1,033,597. Okay. Next illustration, starting again with 20K. You're adding £350 per month. CAGR, compounding, total return, 10% per year for 30 years. That will give you £1,039,862.94. Okay. Again, £20,000 into an ISA plus £600 per month at 8% compounded for 30 years will give you £1,016,982.26. Okay, so you've got a £20,000 ISA. The next year, you're only dripping the £20 ISA in across 12 months. That's £1,166.66 recurring per month going into your ISA. 8% compounded total returns for 30 years. That will give you £1,466,908. Okay. So that's 8% CAGR with the next year of ISA put in and dripped in once a month of £666 per month. That will give you £1.46 million. So that's just an illustration I thought I'd share with you, ladies and gents, as to how it's doable. So it allows you to sleep at night, not chasing the higher risk stocks. Most people on Twitter on a good year will tell you they've done more than 6%. The average person will tell you you've done between 8% and 12%. Some people will do exceptionally well and do 25% and 30% in a really good year. If you look at 2021 and 2020, some people were doing significantly more than that. if you can average that out over 30 years and do 8% and just drip your £1,600 in per month, 30 years later, you should be doing fine. That's just something I was asked to share as to how people could go about doing it. Thoughts, gents?
Peter, one thing I would mention actually is just because it was, you know, how to get to a million. I quite enjoyed Lord Lee or John Lee, his book, How to Make a Million Slowly.
And I interviewed him. He's an exceptional guy.
Yeah, and the book, I think, is a little bit behind the point you're making, that actually, if you take your time on this, you pick good stocks and you let them compound, it will do the heavy lifting for you. And it's a really good read if anyone's not come across it. It's very, very accessible language and examples.
Brilliant. I couldn't agree with you more. Pete?
I guess important thing there as well is the dividend side of things. You know, picking up sort of like 3-4% dividend on some of your stocks, it gets you quite a long way towards, you know, if you're trying to achieve a realistic 10% a year, if your portfolio is generating 3% in dividends, which is easily achievable, you know, getting 3% dividend isn't that hard if you're sticking to quality stocks. You're a good way towards a sort of 10% return, just picking up 3% from the dividend. So that really helps. The other thing is, you said, Pete, about, you know, some years you're going to be up 20%, but it's almost like you need the odd good year to make up for bad years like this year. Because obviously, you know, I mean, I'm having a shocker this year. I think I'm down about 19%, which is just horrible. My income portfolio is doing a bit better. I think it's still just about positive. But, you know, it's a shocker of a year. And it's like, I'm going to need, you know, I need good years to make up for these odd bad ones that you're going to get.
Indeed. And if I'll have to, you might want to double check some of them numbers as well, because I might have calculated them wrong. But they'll all be plus a million quid. Now, I wanted to talk about, Pete, one stock, because I interviewed Todd Wenning for the Investing Matters podcast. And if anyone's not listened to that yet, he's a superb analyst with Ensemble Capital in the US, and he's a phenomenal researcher. And he did a presentation at Berkshire Hathaway's event this year. And so it's made me, I've been trying my best to just drift away a little bit from the UK market, because I'm so focused on what's going on over here. And I've been looking at a stock, which is quite a bit behemoth, so bear with me. And this, the reason why I've chosen this stock to talk about tonight is essentially to get people to have a think about what else is going on overseas, and get them to think about stocks that are away from the UK, especially given what's happened to sterling previously. If you can get some dollar related stocks into your portfolio. And this stock is called Canadian National Railway Co. $CNI. And it's the fourth largest North American railway company. And basically, the reason why this came onto my radar is because no other than Bill Gates had a chunk of change in this particular company and so forth. So that's why I had a look at it. It's got a market cap of £79.7 billion, PE of 21, which seems a bit high for a transport company, essentially, a yield of 1.82%. Price range of $103 to $137, and it's currently sitting at $118. So I just wanted to briefly just mention that stock for people to have a look at. I'm not going to go into too much details about it. It's just something off the radar, away from the UK, for people to just go away and research. James, have you got any overseas stocks at all listed in the US or elsewhere?
Not at the moment. I've got stocks that have a large amount of their business outside of the UK. So we talked about Tremor, iAthena, it's another example.
Bear with me. Talk to me about iAthena, because it's one of them that I've seen lots of people talk about at some point or other, and then it goes cool, and then lots of people talk about it, then it goes, it's just one of them stocks that never seems to get out of its own way. So tell us about that, because I always find it an intriguing company. It just pops on my radar every now and then disappears.
Well, it fits into the natural resources because it's iodine. And the price of iodine has been doing well, but it can go through boom and bust. They just announced in the past week that they've signed all the contracts for Iofina 9. So I think they're putting that in Oklahoma, and they've actually got an area there that they're hoping to develop. So they're already planning the Iofina 10 plants. I think a few years ago they were making some losses, but they've turned the business around, obviously then had the benefit of higher iodine prices. Last year was an exceptional year because they also had, it was either payroll or loan forgiveness. So it was a temporary plus there. But they're making decent money. They're signing contracts. I think it's something like 50% they hope to increase their production by over the next few years. And they seem to believe there's market capacity for that without damaging the price. Doesn't pay a dividend. And I did manage to get on a recent management call, and I asked about that. And they said, frankly, we think that with the developments we've got in mind for Oklahoma and Iofina 9 and 10, actually the best use of spare cash is in investing in that business, increasing production, and particularly while prices are favourable. So it's not the biggest position by a long way, but it seems it went up quite a bit, sort of from low 20 pence to almost 30 pence, and it's come all the way back down. But they seem to be in a good spot, but it is very, very dependent on the iodine price, I would caution.
What's iodine used for?
Oh, good question.
Is it just like chemical industry stuff or something?
I was going to say, I think
it's used in healthcare, Pete. Originally, it was used in healthcare for cuts and infections and so on and so forth. It's used for a multitude of things now.
Okay. Because that's one of the things that's always sort of like one of the sort of like basic questions I've always had about Iofina is what's the background market like? And I don't, if I was going to be doing something with Iofina, the first thing I'd be, you know, really trying to figure out is what kind of demand is there, you know. But it's interesting because Iofina is one of those AIM stocks that's been around forever, and it's been, you know, very difficult for investors for many years. But I do get the impression, because I always read the updates on it, I do get the impression they're starting to get somewhere. So I think you could be onto a good one there.
I've just pulled it up here, Pete. So it's used in pharmaceuticals, disinfectants, printing inks, dyes, catalysts, animal feed supplements, and photographic chemicals as well.
Quite a lot then, so brilliant.
Quite a lot. Used a lot in a lot of different things, But originally it was mainly in pharma and medicines. Pete, have you got a stock you want to share, mate?
Yeah, do you know what? I've got one that it's quite a common stock and everyone, you know, knows it and whatever. I don't hold it. But they had results, I think, a few days ago. They had an update or whatever. And that's good old Whitbread, WTB. Now, obviously, Whitbread has changed a lot because Whitbread, a million years ago, it was a brewer. And now it doesn't do any brewing. But they were Costa Coffee and Premier Inns for quite a while. And obviously Costa Coffee got sold off or span off or something happened to Costa Coffee. But anyway, now they are just focused on the Premier Inn hotels. Obviously, they've been through a torrid time with COVID and all that stuff. And I think the pub side of the business, the bars and stuff that are often joined to the Premier Inns, I think they're having quite a difficult time still. But the actual hotel part seems to be doing pretty well. And I think it can continue to do well because I think you're going to get to a situation where a lot of people are trading down to Premier Inns, with the difficult economic backdrop and stuff. People are still going to want to have holidays. People are still going to go to weddings and need to book into hotels. people are still, you know, there's a million reasons why people, well, all sorts of reasons why people go to hotels. Probably best we don't go into some of them, but I'm totally distracting myself again there. But yeah, so I think, you know, there will still be demand for hotels. I think there'll be a lot of trading down. The other interesting thing that Whitbread have done recently is that they bought some stuff in Germany. They're expanding in Germany. And it looks like there's a good market opportunity in Germany as well. So, you know, I think it's an interesting one. I'm not sure what the numbers look like.
Like you said, actually, in that update, they did say they perceived people were trading down and that had really helped demand in the UK. And on the Germany situation, they said Germany's been slower coming out of the pandemic, but they see a good opportunity there. So it will be interesting to see how that one develops.
Yeah, what they were saying certainly made sense, didn't it? So, you know, and if you remember when they demerged Costa Coffee, part of their rationale for that was they thought there was, you know, more opportunity to have more Premier Inns and more in the hotel business. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if that plays out. I'm just looking up on SharePad to see.
While you're looking it up, Pete, I should mention that in 2 weeks' time, there's the Mellow Investor Get Together, and the link to Premier Inn is I'm booked for a Premier Inn for those nights in the area. But for any of your listeners who are interested, the website to book that is Mellow Events, and really good get together. I know you've both been in the past. I think you did one of the podcasts. You recorded it there, like sort of live.
Yeah.
We've done two from there, yeah.
So that's
happening. That's in Chiswick. Chiswick. On the sort of edge of London, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. So, yeah, that's always a good event. I think it's brilliant because it enables all the private investors, experienced and new and in between, and also some of the fund managers to get together and share information and just a good old get together, really, of like-minded people in a nice space, just enjoying physically seeing each other rather than virtually, conversing. So I think it's always a good event to get to. I need to go back and backtrack just a little bit because I was conscious in my head. I thought that doesn't sound right. The last calculation I did for the ISA was starting capital of 20K, adding the next ISA in monthly of £1,666 plus 66 pence at 8% total return and compounding that for 30 years. That actually gives you 2,466,917 pounds and 81. It was bugging me. So I had to get the numbers right. So yeah, so that's the one. Pete?
Just to confuse our listeners even more, now go back to WTB.
Talk coffee, talk Costa if you want.
Yeah, on WTB, on SharePad, it's on a forward PE of 21.9, falling to 19.7, and you get a forecast yield of 2%, rising to 2.3%. I mean, you wouldn't say it was cheap, but if the growth can come through as something to buy and tuck away, and I think it's one where you'd buy it with a view, you know, for several years hence sort of thing, I suspect it could work pretty well.
Sometimes, and I'll go back to my good friend Phil Oakley, which I'm going to be seeing him in a couple of weeks' time. Sometimes you've got to pay up for quality, Pete, and what's been happening in 2020 and 2021 is that some of us were buying and paying up for stuff that's now turned out to be inferior quality, you know, and Whitbread are not going to be going broke. You know, I'm seeing lots and lots of people who are talking about buying quality, buying the best that we can. And sometimes when we're thinking about stocks, we're looking for what looks cheap, and sometimes they're cheap for a reason and they end up going lower. So we've got to be mindful sometimes we have to pay up for quality. Now, James, I'm conscious of the time and how long we've had you on this podcast. Really, really chuffed to bits to get you on, mate. Really so kind of you to come on and share some of your insights. I wanted to give you the opportunity, really, to just share generally anything to do with investing that you wanted to share, that you've not, to get off your chest and say, look, I'd like to just share this with some of your listeners because this is something that's impacted me or has been positive to me regarding investing. Any nuggets you want to share that's helped you since 2000 to now to be a part-time investor and still be going on?
I think something, this isn't something that will necessarily help everyone because it was circumstances, but I had a gap between two jobs, and actually that helped me to learn a lot. I did a hell of a lot of reading sort of digging out all sorts of podcasts, videos, and I think I learned an immense amount. So I think it doesn't necessarily come quickly. I think you've got to put in the time and the effort to improve yourself at investing. I think it's worth it, and it will help you avoid making silly or easy mistakes. But there's some really good books out there. There's some really good educators, people like yourselves who are supporting investors, pointing them in the direction of resources, materials, things to look at, ideas to consider. And that's a huge help to people who are sort of trying to build their knowledge and find the right path for them in terms of what works for them investing wise. For me, it's not around being a trader. It's around longer term investment. And I've tried to sort of look at things on a shorter term basis. My mind just isn't geared that way. So I think understanding yourself as an investor and what works for you and how your mind works is a really important part. If you know yourself, you'll be a better investor as well.
I love something you said earlier.
So important.
You were talking about when you do your running, and it really chimed with me because I used to, a million years ago, I used to go running and stuff. I think that was really before I started investing as such. But I used to really enjoy, after a day's work, whatever, going out for a run around a park, and there's all the bunny rabbits out because it was, sort of dusk or whatever. It was just lovely, and it was a great thinking time. And one of the things that I've done in recent years, obviously with my health problems, I've been struggling the last couple of years, but I've been doing my garden. I've got a garden out the back of the house, just a small sort of garden area. And I really find that when I'm out there digging in the garden or doing some weeding or whatever I'm doing, my mind drifts and I think about investing things and stock things. And it really helps cement a lot of the knowledge sometimes, especially if you've been reading a book or something, and it sort of like gels in your brain by having that time away where you're doing something completely different, like digging, and it sort of sinks in. And I imagine it's very much the same when you're running.
Yeah, I think too much of, let's say hitting the books or staring at a screen is counterproductive. I think both of you have said that before, that actually doing a sort of, having a balance to life actually helps when you're gardening or doing sort of something else. Your mind can be turning things over even subconsciously, and you'll come back to a topic and have a much better clarity of thought through exercising or doing something different, taking care of yourself. It helps enormously, I think.
Oh, yeah, because, the human attention span is something like 45 minutes to an hour. And if you're doing an hour and a half, you're not taking it in. It's an absolute waste. If you're doing an hour and a half, that last half hour is probably a complete waste of time. You probably haven't taken anything in. You're better off doing an hour's chunk, going off for a run or doing some gardening or going for a walk or doing your cycling or whatever you do, and then coming back and doing another hour later in the day and then another hour later, but having gaps. You're going to be much more focused when you're actually doing it.
Yeah, completely agree. Now, I'm going to call it a close there, chaps, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely.
James, it's been an absolute delight having you on, mate. Thank you ever so much for sharing your insights. And Willie and I will look forward to hopefully catching up with you at an event at some point and enjoying a beer with you at some point as well in and around London. going forward. Wheels, do you want to conclude with me?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks, James. I mean, I remember us talking a while ago, and I think I sort of said, would you fancy being on the podcast? And I think you were a bit like, oh, I'm not sure. But I'm so pleased you came on. I think you've been brilliant. It's been a really, really useful to have this discussion. I think listeners will like it. And I love what you were saying about some, they've got some interesting stocks there, which is really good stuff.
Thank you both. James.
You're very welcome, sir. Thank you ever so much. Now, ladies and gents, I always close at this point by asking you to do whatever you can for whoever you can in the community. We've talked about charities a bit earlier. It's really getting so bad out there at the moment with regards to all manner of different people having to utilise food banks. Charities are struggling, you know, and so on and so forth. So do what you can. When you go shopping, look out for the little, there's two or three trolleys sometimes left near the exits. You can just drop one tin or a couple of tins of beans or a loaf of bread in these trolleys. And what they do, they then take them to the local food banks and distribute them to those most in need. And what we're actually finding at the food banks that I support is actually, you know, you think, oh, crikey, these people are really down and out, you know, blah, 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 blah. But all it takes is three paychecks gone and someone to lose a job. And somebody who was living on the right side of the track suddenly is in need of support for a little while until they get back on their feet. So you're helping all manner of different demographics of people when you support food banks and local charities. So do what you can for yourself, do what you can for others, and always show some kindness for other people as best you possibly can. And really look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, in person going forward in 2023. I want to thank James again, because he's been absolutely awesome on this show. And please follow James on Twitter at onejames1n1. And you'll find lots of really, really good insights and always objective opinion and honesty and integrity regarding what he shares on Twitter. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless you all. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.